Stay tuned for a Juno Afternoon. Jordan Nigro will be here with an update on the Zach Gordon Youth Center. We'll talk with Belle Mickelson, Amy Hawk, and the Reverend Carolyn Malseed of St. Brendan's Episcopal about this week's Family Music Camp. We'll also talk with Police Chief Bryce Johnson. Kristen Mabry and Renee Gayhart will be here with details about how you can help with this year's Ride for the Cure. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music, and more, today on a Juno Afternoon, live at 3 next and repeated at 4 on KRNN and always available online via KTOO.org. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
No justice, no peace, no racism, no peace.
Family, community members, and advocates marched in downtown Winslow, Arizona last week to protest the recent decision by a county attorney not to file charges against the officer involved in the fatal police shooting of L'Oreal Sinigini, the Navajo woman from the community of Tisto, about 44 miles north of Winslow on the Navajo Nation.
We're mad. I don't care what people say, but we're mad.
Her grandmother, Sarah Morris, is among family members calling for Officer Austin Shipley to be removed from the police force.
We're not doing the right thing. If it's a policeman, they're supposed to care for these people here instead of shooting them right there.
Morris and about 100 people marched a half mile from City Hall to the police complex Friday, many holding signs, reading justice for L'Oreal, stop violence against natives, and Shipley must go to jail. The grandmother held a large poster-sized photo of her granddaughter as the group made its way down sidewalks on the windy 100-degree day. Cars drove by a makeshift memorial where flowers and candles sit on a sidewalk near a convenience store where L'Oreal was gunned down in March after Winslow police responded to a shoplifting call. Body camera footage released by the police department last week shows Sinigini falling to the ground as Shipley tries to arrest her for the alleged crime. A second officer is seen behind her as she gets up and walks toward Shipley with an object in her hand, which police say is scissors. Sinigini is said to have been shot 5 times.
She didn't deserve to die. She didn't deserve to die like that.
Alta Barnell is a cousin of L'Oreal. At Friday's protest, Barnell helped carry a large framed picture of L'Oreal holding a child. L'Oreal leaves behind a daughter named Tiffany. Barnell, who has 4 daughters of her own, says it's hard knowing her niece will grow up without a mother. Janice Yazzie questions the police tactics used on her petite 27-year-old cousin.
And she was just the kind of person that, you know, even though she was in a bad place, she always made room in her life to, like, think about other people. We just need justice for her, that's all.
The march ended in front of the police department as heavy rain came down. The crowd gathered around a microphone as people took turns talking.
Hojo is what we try to practice every day. But it comes a time where you have to break out and you have to stand up and you have to put that warrior side in you.
To me, this is a wake-up call for not only for myself but for all of us.
I am not spending my dollars in this town. They don't deserve our money because they don't use those resources to protect our people like they should.
We pledge, just like the community here, we pledge to follow this through until it's done.
The Maricopa County Attorney's Office found no evidence of criminal conduct on the part of Officer Shipley. Family members, the advocacy group, the Red Nation, and Navajo leaders vowed at the protest to seek justice for the family, which includes calls for a federal review. A U.S. Justice Department spokesperson says its Civil Rights Division will conduct a review of the local investigation into the death of L'Oreal Sinigini. Patrick Luke from the Yakima Nation was sworn in last week for a year term as chairman of the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission, which provides support and coordinates fishery management policies for a group of Northwest tribes. The tribal leader has resource management skills and has long fished and gathered food along the Columbia River Basin. People from Minnesota tribes are preparing for a spiritual run this week to spread the message of recovery. The Red Lake, Leech Lake, White Earth, and Fond du Lac tribes take part in the annual event, now in its 20th year. The 4-day sobriety run starts Wednesday from Red Lake to Fond du Lac. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Since 1970, NARF has stood firm for justice in Indian country on critical issues like treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior. Stand firm with NARF. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome to a Juno Afternoon. I'm Lori Scandling in the studio with our producer, Jeff Brown, taking a quick look at the weather. Partly sunny today, highs in the mid-60s, much welcome, of course. Tonight, reverting to partly cloudy, and tomorrow, partly sunny again with highs in the mid-60s. Going to break down a bit on, by Tuesday night, though, tomorrow night, another chance of rain, and then Wednesday, rain looks pretty definite, so we have a nice little window to take advantage of more moderate weather today and tomorrow. Glad you're with us. In the studio with me, my first guest is Jordan Nigro. She is the director of the Zach Gordon Youth Center. Jordan, you've just completed a year in that job, is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So tell me something that perks to the top as to one thing that stands out as something you've learned a lot about in this year that you didn't know in your many years of working at a couple of other nonprofits in Juneau. Specifically, I believe it was SAIL and Juneau Youth Services.
Yep. So I guess, you know, the big thing, I don't know if this is, that's a tricky question. I don't know if this is necessarily something that I didn't know before. In fact, I know this isn't something I didn't know before, but I feel like right now what I have seen in this past year is there's really a great momentum in Juneau right now around youth issues and what's happening with kids and what's happening with kids after school and how as a community we can really come together to support each other. I think that, you know, we know that with the state's economy, things are going to get cut. Things are going to be rough. Like, we know this, right? So I think that there's something really neat happening in Juneau where people seem to really be working together and looking at how can we make long-term change in the most sustainable way. And I've had a lot of fun being at the table with people and talking about that and seeing those things start to get implemented. So I think that's been the most exciting thing for me over the past year. I don't know if that exactly answers your question.
Well, it's something that's been more revealed to you. For folks who might not know, tell us, what is Zach Gordon and where is it and what does it do?
Yeah.
It's been here in Juneau since Zach Gordon himself.
Since Zach Gordon himself, came, which was early 70s.
Yeah, came. He actually originally came during World War II. Mm-hmm. To run the service club
right.
for members who were looking for some leisure time, and he ended up staying in Juneau.
Yep.
So Zach Gordon was a real person. But what does that place do?
So, so Zach Gordon was a real person that he's named after, and he was a great guy. You know, one of the very fun things about being at the center, and that is something that I've learned about that I didn't know much about, really, was Zach Gordon and the history there, is people stop in still that came there when Zach Gordon was alive and talk about him. And they want to, you know, say, oh, Zach Gordon used to do these things and all that. Like, he really was just a gem in the history of Juneau, and so it's just kind of neat to hear that stuff. So the center is right across the parking lot from Centennial Hall, and we are open every day, Monday through Friday, 11 to 9, and then 11 to 10 on Fridays, and then Saturdays we're open from 3 to 10, and we're a drop-in center, so kids can come in for free. We have foosball and pool tables and ping pong and basketball and a workout area, and we always have food on, and we always have staff that are ready and willing to chat with you and play with you and all those fun things. And we have a climbing wall, so we have folks that come in to climb. And if
weight
you,
room still?
We do still have the weight room, yep. And we have an outdoor garden, and we have a fire pit and a little stage area in the back for fun things. And so, yeah, it's a busy place in the summer. You know, there are kids there. As soon as 11 o'clock comes around, we have kids come in the door. And then at 6 o'clock, we do have a curfew for under 14. So from 6 until 9 or 10, depending how late we're open, it goes to teen time. So because originally it was a teen center, not a youth center. So that partially keeps our roots in the teen center. And also it just sort of shifts. It's a safe place for teens to be. And they don't get quite so bothered by the little ones.
There are quite some stratifications when you're a teenager.
Yes, yes.
So one of the programs that came under Zach Gordon's management quite recently is the so-called BAM program,
yeah.
which was named by middle schoolers
right.
for Body and Mind.
Body and
Mind,
yes.
After-school program of each of our middle schools. How's that going with that management? Tell us what's
yeah.
up with BAM.
So BAM has been great. We had a lot of fun doing BAM this last year. We have about 1.5 staff for BAM. So we have a full-time staff who is the main coordinator, and he is based at Santa Kahini. And then we have a part-time staff at Floyd Dryden. So that has really allowed us to increase the amount of activities we could offer. The activities offerings were up about 85% at Floyd Dryden and about 55% at Santa Kahini. So that has been really great. We've served more kids. And that's another, like, when I think about, like, all the things in our community, like, BAM is so great because talk about a sustainable program that doesn't have a high cost and that relies on community partnerships. So, BAM, if you're listening and you're like, what's BAM? I want to be involved in BAM. You could come and give us a call at Zach Gordon, and you can talk to Truett. And how BAM works is we have folks from the community come in and volunteer to offer a class after school. And I say class loosely.
It's everything
it's
from archery
yeah.
to babysitting
yep.
to crafts to
anything
food making.
You're into, really, that you think you can teach in an exciting and fun way to kids. Like, we have Kevin Ritchie teaches Who Wants to Be a Millionaire or How to Become a Millionaire, I think it is. And, you know, you think, oh, man, kids aren't going to want to learn about finance. Why are middle school kids going to care about that? But he has a great turnout because he makes it fun and exciting. So, I mean, if it's something that you are passionate about, in my experience, I think when adults are passionate about something, kids,
it's
that's
contagious.
Exciting for them. Yeah. So we do a lot of cooking because middle schoolers love to cook. I think there's really, that has been something that's become very clear to me this year, is like cooking is such a link to independence, I think. So, you know, if you can go home and cook yourself dinner, or you can cook your parents dinner or something like that, you feel, I think,
grown up.
Yeah. So cooking is super popular. Any cooking classes, baking, whatever it is, they have a high turnout. And we do a lot of work with partner organizations. Discovery Southeast offers BAM classes. The hospital sponsors the babysitting class. So we do a lot of work with other organizations as well, and AWARE with Girls on the Run.
That's what makes it affordable, are those
yep.
volunteers who
yep.
come in and offer time and talent.
Yeah, and there's so many people in Juneau who care about kids and want to do something. And the nice thing about this is it's not a lifetime commitment. You can figure out what works for you and your schedule. So people, the classes start at 3:05, right, after school gets out, and they're done by 4:30, so the kids can catch the activity bus home, or most of the Floyd Dryden kids walk, but some of them catch the bus. And so the timing really can be up to you as far as if you want to do two classes a week for 4 weeks or one class a week for 6 weeks. I did a mixed media art class, and I did once a week for 6 weeks because that was what fit
into my... And is it free to kids?
It is free to kids, yep.
So they always have a safe place to go after school.
Yep. And it's super fun, and middle schoolers are hilarious. I don't know if you've – I mean, I know you have spent much time with middle schoolers, but if you're listening and you haven't spent a lot of time with middle schoolers
– They're so fun.
I think they're just – yeah, they are a hoot. Like, you will laugh because
what is Zach
no
Gordon's phone number? It's a little buried
Zach
in the phone
Gordon's
book because you have to go to the city and then Parks and Recreation.
586-2635.
2635. Terrific. Now, what kinds of changes have occurred at Zach Gordon under your leadership in the
last
year?
Well, you know, we took on the BAM program. The other thing that we have created for this summer is a youth employment in parks program, which is super exciting and super fun. We have 7 kids this summer who are, this is another one of those, we can do so much more with partnerships than we can do alone. So how this program works is we have 7 kids who are employed by SALE, actually, and they get funding through the Department of Voc Rehab and Workforce Development, and they come to Zach Gordon every morning, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., and Mondays and Fridays they learn employment skills with a partnership with our staff and a SALE staff, and then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays they're in the parks working. And so it is like, it is the coolest thing, and I got to tell you, like, we have seen such a – several of the kids that are participating are kids that come to Zach on a regular basis, and it's 16 to 20-year-olds, and just the shift in – you know, employment is so important.
And empowering.
It really is. Like, and we just see it in them, like, kids who just, like, don't say a lot, and then, you know – we see them get this job, and I've been watching them, and, like, they're coming into my office and telling me about what they did, and I go out and meet them on the trails a lot and take pictures and see how they're doing, and they're just so proud to show you what they did, and they count their thank yous. Like, when people see them in the community, they say, hey, thanks, kids, and they, like, count, and they come back and say, we got 5 thank yous today. Like,
it matters.
It is amazing. It's so awesome. So
what are some of the super things that I know the center has offered quite a number of services in the past?
Yeah,
so the employment opportunity.
So we're doing
what else
that.
Is over
and then
there?
The other thing is we took over the Young Parent Healthy Teen Center. And so we are in the process right now of shifting that to be more of a youth wellness center. So we're partnering with the AEYC to offer parenting classes, and we're partnering with AWARE to do some prevention classes there. And we're just in the process, actually, of repainting the space and making it really teen-friendly and young parent-friendly. It was very young parent-friendly, and so we're trying to kind of meld the two. And so that will be, you know, if you're listening and you work for an organization that works with kids and you're wondering, like, how can we do better outreach and you want to offer something in that space, give me a call because I'd love to talk with you. We're really doing it through partnerships because we have 1 Jesuit volunteer for that space. And so, you know, trying to really figure out how to use our resources the best and also be true to the fact that this is the community's youth center. So,
and are those services free to the patrons?
Yes,
they are. We're talking with Jordan Nigro. She's been executive director of the Zach Gordon Youth Center for the last year. It sits downtown behind the convention center, Centennial Hall. They offer a variety of services there, including a healthy teen wellness center that's about to offer services free to participants. They also oversee the BAM or Body and Mind program, which are free after-school activities at both of our middle schools. If you are interested in volunteering for any of those programs, please give Jordan a call at 586-2635. That's 586-2635. Well, your enthusiasm is contagious. Thank you, Jordan.
Thanks, Lori,
for what you do.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 1st of August, 2016. It's the birthday of the first female astronomer, Maria Mitchell, 1818, the island of Nantucket, Massachusetts, daughter of Quaker parents who believed that girls should have the same access to education. Her father was an amateur astronomer, and the girl learned the mathematics of astronomy when she was very young. By the age of 12, she was assisting her father with his astronomical observations. Then she opened and ran her own school for girls, training them in the sciences and math. And October 1st, 1848, she focused her father's telescope on a distant star and suddenly realized she was looking not at a star but at a comet, and she recorded its coordinates, and the comet became known as Miss Mitchell's Comet. In 1865, she was the first woman appointed to the faculty of the newly formed Vassar College for Women. It's the birthday of Herman Melville, 1819, New York City, born to a family of Revolutionary War heroes and merchants who had fallen on hard times. He left school to become a bank clerk, then he tried farming, teaching. He took to sea at the age of 18 as a cabin boy on a merchant ship bound for Liverpool. Came back, tried his fortune in the West. He saw the prairies, he saw the Mississippi headwaters, the Falls of St. Anthony, returned to the East. 1841, he signed up for the whaling ship, the Acushnet, to look for whales in the Pacific. It was an adventure. He jumped ship in the Marquesas. He was held by a band of Polynesians. He escaped from them, jumped that ship, made his way to Hawaii, and then back to the mainland. He was 25 years old, and he wrote about his adventures in Polynesia and about whaling in his first novel, Typee, which was an instant bestseller. Then he wrote another one, O Mu. And then, under the influence of the Transcendentalists and Nathaniel Hawthorne, he wrote his masterpiece, Moby Dick, which got mixed reviews, which disappointed his fans who were looking for another adventure story. And Herman Melville settled into life in New York City as a customs inspector. Here's a poem for today by Lois Parker Edstrom, Choices We Make When We Are Too Young to Make Them. Evenings at the table with my father, stewing over algebraic equations, chemical reactions, my young life sloped toward science and healing. He didn't recognize, nor did I, how I fingered letters the way the devout touch prayer beads, that I held them up to my ear to hear the music they made when strung together, a child rearranging alphabet blocks, balancing them into a fragile tower that spelled out something I was too young to understand. I can't say how we know we please without hearing the exact words, but I knew his pride in me slipped into my hands with soup spoons and Yardley's soap as I fed and bathed him during the last months of his life. A poem by Lois Parker Edstrom, Choices We Make When We Are Too Young to Make Them, from Night Beyond Black, published by Moonpath Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, brain training with over 50 challenging games, from scientists working with university researchers to push cognitive research forward. Learn more at lumosity.com. And by Progressive Insurance, with insurance for cars, home, boat, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And welcome back to a Juneau Afternoon. In the studio with me, we have two people right here, Amy Hawk, who is a musician and will be helping to teach this week's family music camp at St. Brendan's Episcopal Church, and we have the Reverend Carolyn Malseed of that church. And on the phone, we have Belle Mickelson of Cordova, who will be down here teaching Athabascan fiddling. Glad to have you with us, Belle. Glad that you could join us by telephone. Let's get the kind of the nuts and bolts out of the way. The family music camp is set for August 3rd through the 7th at St. Brendan's Episcopal Church, and that's on the Mendenhall Loop Road. Amy, why don't you tell us who's the audience for this camp, and what's the limit on participants, and do you still have space?
We definitely still have space. I'm not sure what the max enrollment is. Can somebody else answer that?
Carolyn or
I don't think we're setting minimums or maximums right now.
We definitely, we've got a good crowd starting to sign up, so it's going to be a lively group, and it's all ages of, you know, youth who want to learn music, whether they have experience or not. We're going to have guitar, ukulele, fiddle. I'm guessing maybe mandolin and banjo.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Belle says yes. So I would guess, and now it says kids 4 to 14 are invited to participate, but you're also recruiting some older youth who can work as assistants, it looks like. What would those older students be expected to do? Are they supposed to be musically competent in order to teach? Carolyn, help fill us in here.
Well, some of them will be musicians, and we're very excited that they'll be there because nothing inspires a kid like another kid. But others will be helping me with the arts and crafts portion. They'll be accompanying us on the afternoon hikes and swim program. And basically, they'll be helping guide the kids and helping them follow along with the program, giving them assistance, and hopefully having a good time also.
And it sounds like there are not only the music lessons, but a whole lot of activities. I see bonfires, games, movies, dinner activities, singing and dancing. Is this an overnight camp?
No, it's
no, it's not overnight. We did think about that, but not enough children were interested in an overnight. But the parents are invited for, or the families are invited for dinner and after dinner activities. So it is a family camp.
Meaning the grown-ups can show up.
They can.
After the dinner hour then.
They can.
Exciting. Belle, talk about your role.
Well, I'm, I guess, the head music concho. But luckily I have some outrageously wonderful musicians to be on the team. And Rhonda Gardner is going to be teaching ukulele. And Theo Hauk is also going to be, he's going to be teaching guitar. And Amy's a really good playing at everything, fiddle, guitar, mandolin. So anyway, she'll be helping out, and I'm available too for fiddle or beginning mandolin. We hope we have some advanced students too, particularly on the fiddle and the guitar. And anyway, I'm bringing some mandolins and fiddles and I think one guitar, and there, we have a stash of guitars at the Arts Council. So I'm looking forward to getting those out and getting them used.
Well, that's good news. What you're saying then is that a child does not have to own an instrument to participate in this camp.
Right. And they also, but if they do have an instrument, bring it. We're good at putting on strings, gluing, you know, getting the instrument. We use this amazing color-coded dot system. So you won't believe it, but by Sunday, kids will be playing lots of songs and singing, and it's really something pretty amazing, and we're hoping some of the adults will participate too, and we're going to just get a lot more music going in Juneau.
Carolyn, is this the first time that your church has hosted this? I've not heard of a family music camp being held in Juneau before, or is this something that happens annually?
Well, this is sponsored by the Southeast Deanery of the Episcopal Church. We used to have annual deanery family camps, but those kind of petered out, so this is an attempt to renew it and to give it a little bit more content. Our other prior camps had there was one camp that had a music component, but most of them did not. And we felt that we wanted something that would promote both faith development and also music development and give some real enrichment to the kids and to their families.
When you say faith development, does a family or the child need to share the particular Episcopal belief system to be a participant?
Not necessarily. We will be doing a program in the mornings called Godly Play, but it's a very open-ended form of religious education that does not demand that a child make certain professions or have a certain belief system. We will be doing very short noonday prayer and compline services, compline and evenings program. But again, you know, a child does not have to share the faith system, and if they're not comfortable in participating in that part of the program, they will not have to.
They have a right not to. Then, what time are the what times will the programs be offered? Like, what time should kids show up? The first day is Wednesday. When should the youth be arriving?
We'll start the program with breakfast at 9:30, but we have a volunteer who is willing to be at the church to meet any children whose parents need to drop them off from 7:30 on. So if the parents are going to work, they can drop the children off.
Belle, I wanted to get back to you for a moment. Your own son was in Barefoot Bluegrass. How did you yourself get into music? It sounds like you have a lot of experience in this, as well as working with youth. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, I was started playing violin and orchestra in Ohio, where I grew up, and played all the way through high school. So I really love the chance kids get in their regular classroom to do that. But right even from the beginning, I was really interested in fiddling. And so when I moved to Idaho, one of my friends said to me, "You play the violin? You should play the fiddle." And I just think how many lives were changed by, you know, our friends helping us to find something new and exciting. And so I joined the Idaho Old Time Fiddlers and, you know, started playing in a band right away. And when I got up to Alaska, I was in bands there too. And as I became a 4-H agent, I'm a science teacher. I actually taught science at Floyd Dryden one year, which was really fun. And realized that music, like, totally changes kids' lives. And so we started these music camps in Cordova. They were actually started first in Anchorage by Mary Shallard. And once we'd been doing these camps for 5 years, we thought every place should have one. So we started Barefoot to kind of, you know, listen to the kids play. Then you'll know. And the same thing's going to be happening in Juneau. You know, by the end of the week, you won't believe how great these kids sound on the guitar, the fiddle, mandolin, and ukulele, and the singing, and just their enthusiasm is great. And we just want to offer that opportunity. A lot of kids don't realize how good they are at music. And when that confidence passes on to all kinds of academics and social skills.
So, Belle, I understand you've just received a prize called the Purpose Prize. Can you tell us about that for a moment?
Yeah, it's a pretty amazing prize. It's for people over 60 that give back to their community. And basically, we want to encourage volunteers because it's so powerful to get the wisdom of the elders. And so I travel out to villages about 40% of my time teaching mostly in the interior, but lately we've started coming to some of the southeast villages. In fact, I got a request today from Yakutat. We've been going there for 5 years. And recently, you know, we had some of our other staff go. One of the Barefoot band members went to another, you know, community here. So it's wonderful to get out there. And we really encourage elders to come in and to speak their own language. And the program is kind of designed to help prevent suicides and drug and alcohol abuse, because it's kind of like you're giving kids something else to do, as well as adults. You know, like, you can't just say don't drink. You know, what are you going to replace it with? And playing music just brings so much joy to community. And just one fiddle player can get the whole town, the whole village dancing and singing. So that's what we're trying to encourage with the camps in Juneau, too.
Great. Amy, what would you say to encourage a family who maybe has zero music exposure? It sounds like from what Belle's saying, this can be a quick induction that's very satisfying, and you have a lot of experience in that.
Yeah, I would certainly encourage anyone who doesn't have musical experience or does to come, because playing together is great for youth who know how to play an instrument. The fact that they're sharing their skill with someone who is just learning is actually a great way to learn more. And then someone who is brand new or just starting, playing with someone better than you is just like this huge push. Plus, I guess I just want to say that a week with Belle Mickelson is magical, so I would encourage anyone to have that experience.
Lots of thumbs up in the studio. Carolyn, what's the best way for someone to get more information about the Family Music Camp, which begins Wednesday, and kids can be dropped off as early as I think you said 7 or 7:30 at St. Brendan's on Mendenhall Loop Road. What's the best way for someone to get additional information? I know it's $50 per child, but there may be other information that someone would like to know about.
Yes, and the $50 is a requested donation. No child will be turned away if they're unable to pay. You can call St. Brendan's at 789-5152, and my own phone number will be on that the recording that you get when you call the church, so they can call me directly after they call the church. I just don't want to put my own number.
Sure, so 789-5152.
Correct, and that will get you to a tape, and then you can get my phone number from that. I think that's probably the best way to get information.
Sounds like a lot of fun for the participants as well as the teachers. We've been talking with Belle Mickelson, who is from Cordova and teaches fiddle, Amy Hawk, who will be part of the staff at the Family Music Camp this week, and the Reverend Carolyn Malseed of St. Brendan's Episcopal Church about this week's Family Music Camp, and a whole lot more. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you,
Lori.
Hey, Lori, that was great.
Thanks, Belle.
This is Bird Note. Out in the arid west, miles north of Winnemucca, hawks and Harleys cruise the Great Basin. A small caravan of birdwatchers searches for raptors along a distant ridgeline of basalt and sage. Wild horses graze up there, their silhouettes framed by a blue sky. Nearby, a circle of green, created by pivot irrigation, attracts northern harriers that hunt over fields and marshes. Today, our group's about to see a rare sight. Field trip leader Harry Fuller calls it out.
We got male harrier sky dancing. Male harrier sky dancing over the pivot on the right up here.
In flight, a raptor is creating a high-amplitude sine wave, rolling on its back, turning like a corkscrew through the air. Raptor expert Dick Ashford immediately recognizes this as the sky dance of a male northern harrier.
The bird literally is on its back doing a barrel roll, and he turns his head just like these divers in the Olympics.
So he's going head over tail or wing over wing?
Wing over wing. He's doing a barrel roll.
Wing over wing.
Yeah. Head over tail would be a good one.
Well, that's what I thought you
were talking about. So this is really a rare sighting. I'll guarantee you, you'll be amongst a small group of people who've ever seen it.
Many raptors perform sky dances. Come see for yourself at our website, birdnote.org.
Friday, August 5th, get ready to groove when KXLL and the Juno Arts and Humanities Council presents Smoking Bill, Alaskan composer Ed Littlefield's ska-inspired funk rock band from Seattle. Doors open at 7:30 at the Jack, featuring a DJ set from KXLL's Mari Wiener. Tickets and information at jhc.org.
And welcome back to a Juno Afternoon. Our next guest is our police chief, Bryce Johnson. He's been with Juno as its chief for 3 years. He's retired out of the Salt Lake City, a police force, and glad to have you here. I know that you have some pending kind of time-sensitive news to share about the police entry-level test. Let's start with that. Talk a little bit about what that exam is, and I'd like to know what kind of vacancies and vacancy rate our department has, in other words, compared to total force.
Yeah, so thanks for having me here today. So we run testing processes on a regular basis. We were doing them about every other month, but we slowed down a little bit because we don't have quite as many vacancies as we used to have. So right now we have 4 vacancies, which is getting to about 2%.
That's on the officer corps?
That's on the officer side. And so we're trying to fill those last few positions, and we'll be testing again next week. Well, in 2 weeks, August 10th through the 12th. And you can go to publicsafetytesting.com, or you can just go to our website, junopolice.com, and there's a link that'll get you to the hiring process. So there's a written test that you take, and it takes a little while to finish that written test. And then after the written test, there's a physical test that we have you do. That's a little bit more fun because you get to do some push-ups and sit-ups and go for a little jog. So it's an enjoyable afternoon doing the PT test.
What kinds of things are asked on the written test?
The written test is a lot like a logic test. If you've ever taken other tests, like the military does the ASVAB test, it's the similar kind of things. They're looking for the ability to think critically. There is some a lot of what we do has to do with being able to communicate both orally and in writing. So there's some writing portions that where you read paragraphs, you have to understand what's in it. So there's some of that. But it's very similar to other, if you're taking a college entrance exam, ACT, SAT tests. It's very similar to those type of tests.
Speaking of college, does somebody get a preference if they've had college?
You do. So if you've had college, we put you in at a higher pay rate. So you end up getting advanced on that pay scale. Then we have other incentive programs once you're there to encourage people to both continue their education and reward people that have received their education.
Policing, of course, is in the news in a very high-profile fashion in the last several weeks as peace officers have both been criticized for their behavior as well as literally come under a fire in the line of duty. With that in mind, what would you say is the most important quality that a candidate or a hired officer can bring to that position?
So the thing we're always looking for is just a good person. You know, if you're a good person, you're an honest person, you can talk to people. That's what we're looking for. So there are things we can train you to do. You're going to have to be able to do some other things, but we can train that. But we're looking for just good people to come and apply. So that's the number one criteria, is just be a good person. You know, be a good neighbor. Wherever you're working now, do a good job, and we'll take a good hard look at you.
What has the department done in the last few weeks as the challenges have arisen amongst citizens about how to treat each other and how to treat police, and police then behaving in their official role? That certainly has raised the profile of police-citizens relations. How has your department responded locally?
So we are very fortunate that Juneau is just a great community, and we have what I've described as a very strong relationship with our community. But I always am careful when I say that, because there is a segment of the population in Juneau that does not trust the Juneau Police Department. And the worry I have is we get complacent in the fact that we have tremendous support from the community. Just because a whole large group of the community very actively supports us doesn't mean that we don't need to actively try to engage the people that don't trust us and sometimes fear us. And we continue to work on that. We had a big event just down the road here at Marine Park last week. We did a barbecue. We had hot dogs. We had thousands of people come out. Now, a few of them were folks off the boats, but most of them were locals. It was kind of fun. Most of the people staying at the Glory Hole came by, and they got a hot dog. And we donated all the leftovers to the Glory Hole afterwards, and I was kind of walking up there because the police car was filled with donations. So I was just walking, and there were a couple of the local street people. They had hot dogs in their hands, and they were eating them, and they waved and said hello to me and said thank you, and we got to talk back and forth. And people came and they signed. We had whiteboards that were placed around the park, and people wrote down kind of what they were thinking. And it was a really good chance for us to engage with a lot of people and have a lot of good conversations. People have just been bringing things to the police department for weeks. We've had food dropped off, balloons, flowers, lots of notes, emails, very, very kind people. There was an event last week at the University of Alaska Southeast. It was a creative, they tried to use art to try to bring dialogue about racial justice and the criminal justice system. And there were several police officers and police employees that participated at that event as well. And that was another chance to talk to different people and engage on the problem. And there's several other things scheduled coming out. I learned of another one that's going to come up next week that is just being planned. I don't have any details for you yet because they're still planning it. But I got a call asking if we'd participate in that, and I said yes. There's a family event, and I hesitate to advertise all of them because I don't know how much they want just the public to show up.
Sure.
But there's a family event, I believe, at Twin Lakes next week for the Brown family, who their son was a victim of one of the murders last year, is planning an event to bring the community together again. So there's so many things going on in Juneau, and we try to participate in all of them. Again, if I can make the point, though, there's so many people that support us in Juneau, and we're so grateful for that. But we can't become complacent because we have so much support here. We know that here in our town, there are people that, for their life experience, for whatever reason, they don't trust the police department, and we have to actively continue to find a way to talk to them and engage them as well.
How diverse is our police department? We have perhaps 15 to 20% of our population is of Alaska Native heritage. What does our department look like?
Our department is about 6% Alaska Native, which is a little bit lower than the census statistics. The last census statistics I looked for, Juneau had the Alaska Native population about 12% in Juneau, so I don't know
about
which
half that then.
Yeah, so we need to do better in that, and that's something we've actively worked on. In fact, if you go to our Facebook page, there's a video of Sergeant Burke, one of our Alaska Native sergeants, talking about his experience as a police officer, what it was like for him to become a police officer. We've been actively attempting to recruit more Alaska Natives to apply. We haven't had an Alaska Native hired as a Juneau police officer for many years. So our officers that are Alaska Native are all getting towards the end of their career. Hopefully none of them are retiring really soon, because I like them and I want them to stick around. But in the next 5, 6 years, 7 years, they'll be retiring. So we need that. I know that's something we need to work on, and we're actively taking steps to try to recruit more.
So we have, what, about 50 officers on the force here in Juneau, is that right?
Currently we have 50. We're authorized for a few more, but we have those few vacancies, but yeah, about 50.
So if anyone reads the news, they know there have been a lot of thefts in Juneau. I assume that's related to drugs in general, if not specifically the heroin prevalence in our very small community. We have an acquaintance who indicated a lot of equipment was stolen from his property, and JPD indicated that was unfortunate, but they probably did not have the person power to resolve it. How serious a situation is this, and what can the police do?
So, and I don't know about the conversation you specifically had or what the officer was saying, but we have the people power to do it. That's not the issue. We have people actively working these cases. We had a field operation just in the last week where I had 8 officers out actively contacting people that we thought were possibly involved. So there are lots of resources going to it, so I can't comment to that specific conversation you had. I don't think that conversation was accurate, and I'd be happy to follow up with them at any time. But the bigger point, there are a lot of thefts, especially burglaries, taking place, and most of these are crimes of opportunity. They are often tied to people that are addicted to drugs, but that's not always. We've made several arrests on the many burglaries, and we've put information on it out, but all those arrests don't seem to be slowing it down. We're getting about 30 to 40 burglaries a month right now, which is quite a few. Again, I think, though, there's a lot of things we can do to help that out. Number one is if people see something suspicious going on in their neighborhood, please call us so we can go out and look at it. Specifically, what a lot of these burglars are doing is if your house is bordering on a trail that's accessible by bicycle, they're riding bikes on those trails, and they're accessing your house through the back. So if you see someone that looks – now, I don't want you to call every time you see someone on a bike, because there's lots of great cyclists in town. In fact, I'll be out on my mountain bike riding tomorrow afternoon. So this isn't, hey, someone on a bike is doing a burglary. But a lot of the people committing them are doing it on bikes. So if you see someone riding a bike, pulling up into houses – doing something that would be suspicious, we would like a call on that, especially in the Fritz Cove area. There seems to be quite a few up there with the bikes. So if you see something like that taking place, give us a call so we can go out and try to talk to those people and see what's going on. And really, there's a lot of neighborhoods where it's happening in the valley, in the flats. It's been happening in downtown businesses. So if you see someone that's acting suspiciously, give us a call. But then there's things that you can do to protect your house. You know, lock your doors. The days of being able to leave your door unlocked ended years ago. This isn't a new thing. But if you're leaving your doors unlocked, that's you're inviting these crimes of opportunity.
And same for your car.
Your car, don't leave valuables in your car. Don't leave your laptop in your car, your iPhone in your car. Now, I say that, and it was just a week or so ago. I went home, and I lost my phone. I was frantically looking for it and went out to my car and was sitting on my front seat. So I try not to do that, and I just messed up that day. But if you mess up like me, odds are someone walks by, they're going to get it, and then you're off the phone.
Out.
So take active steps. The more you can make your house look like there's someone there, the better. A lot of these burglaries are taking place in the daytime, about 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. So they're looking to see who's home, who's not home. So the more you can make your house look like there's someone there, motion sensor lights, things like that, that can help quite a bit.
Well, thank you for joining us this afternoon. If someone had more questions about how to be more theft-proof, what's a number they could call and get some more information?
So they could call the police department. They actually, if they go on our website or our Facebook page, we've got information on all those things, and they can get all that off of there.
All right. Well, I appreciate your taking the time to come and update us.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for your work. Of rocking around the clock, just an FYI, the national night out parties are tomorrow night from 7 to 9. There are 18 parties around Juneau, and please, if you are not scheduled to go to one at your neighbor's, there is a community party at the Rotary Park, and that's on Riverside Drive. The intent is to strengthen neighborhood spirit and police community partnership, and we did not have a chance to mention that with the chief who was just on. I'd like to welcome to the studio Kristen Mabry and Renee Gayhart, and they're talking about this year's Ride for the Cure, which is this Friday at 5. But Kristen, you started talking about supporting Renee on another effort, right? So help me understand that.
So Renee is again participating in one of the Susan G. Komen 3-day cancer walks, and I'll let Renee share a little bit about her experience.
Yeah, last year I did the 3-day walk in the Seattle area. It's a 60-mile walk, so over the course of 3 days, you walk 60 miles.
I'm tired listening to this.
You see why a fitness center would support this, right?
Exactly, yeah. And it's a great event. At that particular walk, there were about 700 people. And so you do your walk during the day, and then you camp at night. And after the 3 days, there's a closing ceremony, and they talk about how much money was raised. And Susan G. Komen really has a mission for a variety of things. They do quite a bit of research. They do treatment screening and then education about breast cancer. So over the, I think they started in the 80s, and they've raised over $890 million towards research and just over $2 billion towards treatment screening and education. So it's just, it's a great event. And so this year, I decided to try the 3-day in San Diego to hopefully get a little bit better weather and just see a different part of the country.
So, Kristen, what is the ride? Tell us a little bit about that. Is it a local expression of what this larger effort is?
So Renee's been a longtime supporter of my business, and her commitment to her own personal health and wellness is an inspiration to a lot of my clients. And Renee has to do quite a bit of fundraising to be able to participate in this event, and so we want to support her and her efforts to do that. And so my clients came to me and said, hey, you know, we really want to help support Renee do this. And I said, well, you know what? We're gonna do a Ride for the Cure here, and every dime that, in fact, people just donate straight to the cause, and I'm just saving them bikes for the ride. So all the money goes straight to the cause, and we're super excited to be able to host this event and come together. I'm already putting together a great cycle playlist full of music by strong women, and so we're really looking forward to having a fun time Friday night at 5.
And is it at a location, or are people actually out on a bike riding a route? Explain how that will work and where your business is, Kristen.
You know, I love outdoor cycling. I really do. With the Juneau weather, you just never know. So we're lucky to have a fantastic cycling studio at Mountainside Wellness. So we'll be riding inside Friday at 5. Guaranteed good weather, good views.
And where is Mountainside Wellness?
So our lovely studio, Mountainside Wellness, is located in the Arcticore building. So between 4th and 5th and Golden Harris, the same building as the charter school. So right below the cathedral and above Holy Trinity, up on the 4th floor with great views.
And is the point to be sponsored X number of dollars per mile? Is that how the funds will be raised?
So we're asking for a minimum donation of $25. More than that is great. But again, you can donate straight on the3day.org. Just look up Renee's
name. 3day.org.
Yeah, and there's links to that at mountainsidewellness.com with more information about the event on Friday.
And we should clarify, Renee, how is your last name spelled?
Gayhart, G-A-Y-H-A-R-T.
Just how it's spelled, or just how it sounds, yes. I should say. So are you a cancer survivor? Is that your motivation here, Gay? Kristen mentioned how motivating that your journey through health has been.
Mm-hmm. Not personally, but I've had several family members and friends. I think like most women in any time after 20, all the way through the lifespan, we're all touched by cancer. So I definitely have seen how Susan Komen has touched individuals in my life and assisted them with early detection and then also some treatment options. They really do try to focus on populations that are either uninsured or underinsured, so it really helps out a very large percentage of folks across the United States and other countries as well.
And Renee, when is the San Diego 3-day walk?
It's November 18th through the 20th. And also, I should have mentioned, like Kristen said, you have to raise $2,300 in order to do the walk. And so I'm pretty far along the way. I'm close, but you have to raise the money before you're actually allowed to do the event. So
a general sign up then.
No, it's not a general sign up. It's definitely, but it's well worth it.
And if you know anything about Susan G. Komen, sorry, they keep meticulous records and every dime is accounted for, and they're known for that. We've done several Zumba-thons to raise money for that foundation as well, and they do really meticulous record keeping. So every penny of that $2,300 will be allocated straight to research. And the one thing I wanted to get across, too, is that we're super interested in cultivating this sense of support. And I think anybody who's known someone with breast cancer in their family or friends know how important it is to have that network support system. And that's one of the things that our studio is really about. And I'm so happy to see people come together and want to support Renee and our community, building healthy bodies and healthy communities.
We're talking with Renee Gayhart and Kristen Mabry about raising funds to support Renee's 3-day walk with a Ride for the Cure Friday at 5 at Mountainside Wellness in the Arcticore building downtown. Thanks for joining us, and good luck on your walk.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on Translator.